Welcome back, 1221, 1260 WRC, Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. Monday, let's see, Monday means Robert Knight. Yes, and he's arrived, and I actually think he may even be back in town. He was away in Maine for a short period of time. He's a senior fellow for the American Civil Rights Union and a columnist for the Washington Times, and today's offering is The Kindness of Strangers Has Its Limits. Hello, Bob. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Andy. It's sort of good to be back, although being up in Maine at this time of year is pretty darn good, too.
Yeah, I'll give you that. All right, so you kind of take your trip home, and you developed a column out of it. Funny what stopping for a case of Moxie can do for you, huh?
Oh, Moxie is good in any circumstance, I got to tell you.
That's the carbonated drink that, I guess, has its roots up north, right?
Yeah, it's only in New England, and it has a slightly odd flavor because of the gentian root. And they made all sorts of claims, as they did originally for Coca-Cola, claiming it had great health properties. Well, they still do that for Moxie. I know it makes me feel great when I have a can of Moxie.
There you go.
I don't want to oversell it, but it's great stuff. You ever go up north, grab a case.
Will do. All right, that actually, that stop to pick up a case of this stuff helped you develop this piece this week, right?
Well, it did. We're in a supermarket parking lot in a little town called Turner, and I came out and just heard the car wouldn't start. So I thought, oh, great, it's the starter or something. Mm-hmm. A nice lady from the supermarket came out and immediately tried to give us a jump start, and that didn't work. And I thought, oh, boy, we're in for it. And we had the hood up, and all these people kept coming by offering to help, especially this one woman who gave us the name of three mechanics and said she owned a cafe up the street and she'd be happy to have us stay there the whole time our car is worked on, including our dogs, and she'd come get us. And I thought, my gosh, where are we in the South? This is up in Maine. And it occurred to me that the idea of charity is not limited to the South. It's most obvious when you're outside a metropolitan area.
Yep.
You know, I'm not to knock D.C. or New York.
No, but you're
it's
right.
It's a lot friendlier in the hinterlands.
Yep, it sure is. You know, and when I was reading your column, I said, yep, this is the real world. You know, this is where America really lives, not this concentration in these big metropolitan areas where everyone has their own thing and they really don't care about anyone else.
That's true. Part of it is just seeing too many people.
I
realized that last time I was in D.C. and I went up in an elevator in a high-rise, and there are only two of us in the elevator, and we didn't even make eye contact or talk or anything.
Yeah.
That wouldn't have happened out in, say, Lynchburg, Virginia, or, you know, in Oklahoma or anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's just, you just learn to keep your eyes down, and that's part of urban life. Although you do find a lot of nice people in the middle of the city. I've found them in New York and Washington and elsewhere.
Yeah.
So I don't want to overgeneralize. But this got me thinking about the limits of charity. You know, how much do these people really owe us as we sat there and needed help? And it occurred to me it's different from what we're being asked to do at the border now, which is to take in untold numbers of refugees who are not fleeing a war particularly, but they've heard that the getting is good and that there'll be amnesty if they can just get here. So they're sending tens of thousands of children to the border. It's a huge crisis that Obama has created by misapplying a 2008 law that was intended to stop sex trafficking, and also by saying dreamers can stay. Those are the people who grew up in America and their parents were illegals. But he sent all these signals that, hey, if you just get here, you can get in the, you know, into the welfare state. And I thought, that's not biblical. That's not we're told by the good book to take care of widows, orphans, and the stranger. But there's nothing to suggest that you have to do away with borders and have mass migration and then have other people pay for it.
Yeah.
It's one of those instances where you have a good rule that is taken to extremes, and then you're pounded over the head with it. If you're not for this, you must hate people.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, the president's asking us for $3.7 billion to throw at this problem that, as you pointed out, he created. And there's no real solution there. I mean, all we're going to do is make sure we pay their freight.
Yeah, no solution from Obama, because he's not doing what he needs to do, which is secure the border. Cut off the idea that people get on in welfare programs. And also, you do have to punish employers who knowingly hire illegals. There are several steps you can take to mitigate this, one of which is to send buses full of the kids back to their countries, you know, in the most humane way, with adults who can supervise and take care of their needs, and say, look, the party's over. We're not accepting anymore. quit sending your children up here. That's what they could do, but right now they don't seem inclined to.
Yeah. Yeah, if he gets his way, the doors remain open. Those coming in, they get a lawyer. They get all the paperwork taken care of for them. They get charity from the taxpayer, and quite possibly they'll live here forever. In fact, more than likely, they'll live here forever.
Yes, and they become progressives because they've known nothing other than centralized power handing them a free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the plan, to get more and more people dependent so they can register them and get them to vote for left-wing candidates. I mean, that's really been the plan for a long time.
Yeah. Do you have a line in your column that got my attention? Hard cases make bad laws. Explain that.
Well, you see this all the time. When liberals want to expand government, they find a hard case. Somebody who's fallen outside, fallen through the cracks, so to speak. And they'll say, you know, Missy so-and-so and her husband have been waiting forever for this such-and-such. And you find out they're kind of an exception to the rule. But they say, now we need to expand this whole thing because of these poor people. And we've told you their sad story. It's actually a form of argumentation called argumentum ad misericordem, an appeal to misery. And the press is schooled in it. The journalism schools teach it. You notice, Andy, when you read an article in liberal newspapers, they, when they're pushing a program, they first start with a hard case and find, you know, to get your sympathy. Then they finally tell you what they're up to, which is to expand the government in some form or another.
That's true.
Yep. I always brush past the hard case, not because I'm hard-hearted, because it's because I know what the reporter is up to.
Yeah.
I've been a reporter. I was in the business for years, and I know exactly how it works.
Yeah.
So I always lose patience and say, well, what are you really trying to tell me? What's the story really about? Oh, I see. More funds are needed for this particular agency. Thank you very much.
That's
There's
right.
the agenda.
Yep, you're right. You talk about a late friend and his connection with a homeless man you witnessed.
Oh, yeah. This is Michael Schwartz. You may even have talked to him in your travels. He died a couple of years ago. But he was a very active and bright pro-life activist in Washington for years.
Mm-hmm.
I met him when I was at the Heritage Foundation years ago. And Mike had a big heart for the poor. And he had just as much hatred toward the welfare state because he thought they were creating more poor and keeping them enslaved. And he demonstrated personal charity to me one day when we were walking for lunch. And we didn't have much time. And a homeless guy approached us. There are a lot of them on Capitol Hill. And instead of rushing past like everybody does, he stopped and said, well, how are you? And the guy says, well, I don't want to waste any of your time. And I remember Mike saying, you know, there's no more important place in the world for me to be right now than talking to you. And the guy brightened like, gosh, somebody gave me some dignity for the first time in years. And then the guy kept asking him for money, and he said no, because he knew he'd buy some more booze with it.
Yeah.
So he said, but I'll tell you what, I will buy you a meal. So the guy finally agreed, and they went over to a cafe, and he bought him a Coke and a sandwich, and, you know, blessed him in the name of the Lord, and then we went on to our lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget that, because that was charity in action. That was one guy reaching out to another without an intervening agency full of cold-hearted bureaucrats making it all contractual.
Yeah, that's true. The kindness of strangers has its limits. It's in today's Washington Times and WashingtonTimes.com. It's by Robert Knight. Bob, always good to talk to you. Thank you much.
You too, Andy. Try that moxie sometime.
Yeah, I will. Okay, take care.
Okay, see ya.
1229 WRC.